Please be seated. I had a couple of calls over the weekend asking if we were going to cancel church today. Yeah, and so I prepared to preach to an empty room of sensible people that wouldn't come downtown if there wasn't water. So it's really nice to see you all here. Good morning. And you all don't know me well enough to know I'm not a church canceller. I just don't believe in it. I think people can work it out, right? So really glad to be here and with you and together. One of the reasons I started to get these calls, one, because the water's not good in downtown right now, but because we had Shepherd Ansley's funeral yesterday, and people were concerned if we'd have the capacity to do it, because it would be a full room. And Shepherd Ansley, in light of these readings, helped me to clarify really specifically what it is, this treasure that you have in clay jars, what the gift of Christ is in this community, needed by the community, the work of our time, which is to know one another, to seek one another, and to seek one another as authentically as we can as who we are. It seems really simple, and I said it because these are simple words, but it's so complex. All of the readings are about that very simple idea. So your assignment is the same assignment that you had if you went to the funeral, is to talk to somebody, one person you don't know today. You don't have to talk a lot, just pretend you're Shepherd Ansley, because it's as close as we get to be, and just go shepherd on somebody today before you leave church, right? Just one. And you're just gonna be a happier person if you do it, aren't you? His daughter said yesterday that her mother used to say of him when he retired that he should get a job as a greeter at Walmart and the world would be a better place for it. And clearly that was the gift of God in him. It is a gift to love life and love people that much, right? To greet them, to know they should be greeted, to know the power of your greeting, to include and welcome and invite. Right? I think our parents tell us of that from our youngest age, and we don't believe it in ourselves. From the beginning, all of us tend to tighten up something. We close down a little bit. But the world tells us to say thank you. Right? Our mother tells us to say thank you. This place tells you to welcome, to invite, that you are welcome, that you are invited. And the readings are about that today. But it's about inviting God. And we have a group that's about to go out on pilgrimage to the Camino. So assignment number two for them, special assignment for them, they'll be talking to strangers for the next 2 weeks. If you have something that you would like prayed for, find one of them. You'll see them because we'll come up to pray for them today. Find one of them and give it to them. Write it down so they can remember. It's that serious. Let them take your prayers with them. They can do that. They can carry it with them, and they will know they're not alone. And this is the power of invitation, isn't it? That what sounds like work, what feels like work, what feels hard to go out, that might even feel like you are imposing yourself, is the opportunity for someone to be in relationship with you, to know you, for you to know them. And this is really all our faith is about. That is the perfect freedom we find in Christ, that connection between one another, right? That thing that is in the world that binds us to each other, because we say we are all made of one thing, of one will, of one person, really, in God, of one. And that knitting back together is the work of Christian community. And again, it seems really simple, but it's a wonderfully complex idea. So here's the story I've been thinking about all week in relation to it. I was in India with my parents a few years ago, and we stayed in a hotel in Kerala, where we're from, very close to the place that we're from, so near between my mother's house and my father's house in this hotel, because they are of a generation where their parents have died and their siblings were older or have died or have moved, and it wasn't really clear where to go stay. Like when you're younger, you go stay with your grandmother, but we didn't have grandmothers. Which sibling do you stay with when they're older and it might be difficult and there's another generation of kids that are my cousins? How do you pick one? Who are you gonna offend if you pick one? So you go to a hotel, right? So we went to a hotel. And this hotel was built to look like a traditional Kerala village. So I am delighted, because I have never lived in a traditional Kerala village, to go be in this place. And my cousins were not impressed. They thought it was kind of Disneyland-esque. My parents said it was like their grandparents' homes. Not their parents, but their grandparents' homes when they were young. And so we're walking out of these really beautiful, traditionally built spaces, and walking to where you get to have breakfast, walking with my mother and talking. My father's ahead of us, just like how he likes to walk, talking to a complete stranger. And we're on vacation, so whatever. And my mom and I are talking, We get quiet, we're walking, and I realize my father is not speaking Malayalam, which is our language, which is what I assumed he was speaking with this person and why he was talking to a stranger. How nice to speak your home language at home. And then I realized he wasn't speaking Hindi. So he wasn't speaking English, he wasn't speaking Malayalam, he wasn't speaking Hindi. I don't speak Malayalam or Hindi, but I recognize them. So I asked my mother, what language is he speaking? And clearly it's a language because the other person is responding, they're laughing, they're walking. And she said, oh, he's speaking Bengali. I was like, well, does he speak Bengali? And she looked at me, that look that your mother gives you, that, you know, that look, you know the look that she gave me. Well, he lived in Calcutta and Odisha, for, what, 15 years as a young adult, so he would have had to speak to people while he was there. So yes, so I said, so wait, he speaks Odia as well? I said, yeah, we all speak some because we lived there as students. I said, so you speak Bengali? She was like, well, not as well as your father. So I'm from Garland, Texas, where we speak English. And I was taught English by my parents, who were taught British English and speak it with Indian accents, South Indian accents. And so early on in the early 70s, I was the English speaker in our household that could be understood in our community. So I have been the translator to the community of our family since I was about four. And I think I assumed in there, I never consciously thought this, that I had this skill that was mine and of the place we had come and required for the place we were living that was mine. Of course, thinking back, my father and mother taught me English. I remember them doing it. I remember reading with them the prayer book and learning how to say these words. But I had taken it as mine, and I had taken the task of communicating as mine and connecting our whole family. And I had assumed that my parents were limited in that capacity or needed me for it. It hadn't occurred to me to figure out what their story was, right? I could have took the view of the world of them as true. I know none of you have any experiences like this, right? And the text is about that today. And my mother said, while we were standing there talking about my father's five languages that I'm aware of, who knows what else there is, that, you know, he's so outgoing, he's so extroverted, always talking to strangers. And I thought, no, that is not the man I know. And it took me a little bit of walking to think, oh, because people in Dallas don't speak his English. So I thought he was an introverted person, kind of a shy and reserved person, because he was protecting himself and protecting us. But there he was, and for our entire trip, talking to strangers in languages I don't understand and having a blast. I saw a version of him I had not seen in my entire 40-something years on this earth. And the text is telling us something like that, and pilgrimage does some work like that. You think, you do, because you go to this church, that you are meeting the world as you are, as well as you can. And God bless you, and you're gonna do it, because we're gonna all Shepherd Ansley it today. We're gonna do it, we're gonna keep stepping out. But the invitation today is, yes, God calls you as you are, as you know, and there are guides, and that's why we sit here, right? Samuel heard loud and clear. God called Samuel directly in a language he spoke, but he didn't know what it was. He didn't know who it was. He didn't know how to respond. And the old man, who was too troubled and corrupt and problematic for God to speak to him, it was too late for him, was the interpreter for Samuel. Samuel needed Eli. And a similar thing happens in this gospel reading where Jesus on the Sabbath, I'm gonna tell you, Jesus could have waited, it was the Sabbath, withered hand man would have been there the next day, right? Jesus goes to the temple and the people say, and they are setting him up, it's Mark, he's being set up for there to be a trial, for him to be killed. But they watch to see what he will do and he knows what they're watching for. And he goes into the temple place, and there's the man with the hand. We know what's going to happen. He could just wait a day, and Jesus could live, but he doesn't. And the story he alludes to is the story of the bread of presence, the deepest part of the tradition of bread for us, of ritual bread. So you know of the Passover bread, right? You know of the bread of manna, whatever that was, the breads of liberation. You know of the bread that we're about to eat that one of you made, that bread of liberation, the Christ bread for us that we're about to take. And here is your through line in the reading today. Jesus goes in, and he is about to heal on this day, and he invokes the bread of presence. So you read about that in Exodus and Leviticus. You read about it again in Hebrews. Go look into it. It's amazing. And it is that as before they have a temple, as they have a tent, and God is kind of hanging out in the tent with them, which is their sign that God is with them. God still speaks, even though they're not in the wilderness, and there's not a pillar of fire, and there's not a clear sign of God. There is this tent, and on it is a golden table that they are told to build, and the priests are to make bread and put a couple of loaves of it on that table. Sound a little familiar, right? Some piles of bread. I think it was supposed to be covered with frankincense, if I'm remembering correctly. Doesn't sound tasty, but sounds beautiful. And they were supposed to eat it up once a week because bread goes bad and do it again. And that bread of presence was a sign of God with them. Sounds a lot like what we do, doesn't it? And David and his buddies are out warring because that's what David did, and they're hungry, and there's no food. And the priest says, oh, take this. Take this. And they have it. All of these things are made for us, it says, is what Jesus is trying to say, right? Is what the things are for us. If there is not water in our neighborhood, we should serve water. That is more important than anything else we can do. If there are people that are hungry around us, we feed them. It is the important thing. Because we are made for one another. We are knit together in this invisible body of relationship, which is the Christ life among us, the Spirit, God creating. It is what we are for. Now, I've been thinking about what we are for because we've got some big work to do in the next couple of years, and I can get really tedious about the details of how we get there, as you saw in the Shepherd's Voice. It's one of my gifts. Here's every last detail. Every last detail. Let's talk about all of it. There, we don't have to have secrets among us. We don't have to have one person bear the weight of the institution on the finance committee. It's for all of us. We can do it. We can do it. We're called to do it. But the it, is that we are made for one another. Known. Built exactly as we are, body, mind, heart. And it is the systems of this world that do things like tell my outgoing father to be a little more careful because people don't know how to hear that kind of English, right? It is the systems of this world that we name as sin that act on our bodies. And it's not like my dad feels oppressed. I'm sure he's watching this. He doesn't feel oppressed at all. He's living his life, loves his life. But something acted on him, right? Something happened in the world. And it happens to all of us all the time. And the work is in every next moment, and this is not his work, it's my work, in the next moment, is it's not the same work decade to decade, sometimes year to year. That thing that might have been your story, that closed you down, that was your worry, that marks you 20 years ago, doesn't have to be the thing that marks you now. And if anything, there might be something new. And the reason it matters is it keeps you from knowing how beloved you are, because the way you know how beloved you are is we tell you. You make yourself known to us so that we can tell you. That's how it works. That you know when that call of God is for you, because we will tell you. We who don't know how to respond to that, we who don't get that call, it's not for us, it's for you. You've got to be open to that for this time. I've just decided at church, why do the other things? Why do the performative things? Why do the superficial things? Sorry, I said performative, I'm all for that, but superficial things. Why do them? Why not do the most important things, the things that matter? In this place, come as you are, really, not as you were even 2 years ago, or 6 months ago, or 10 years ago. Come as you are right now. Go on that pilgrimage and journey as you are right now, and tell us about it. Tell us about it so that we can tell you about that tradition of God that calls you in the words we know to use when that call comes, of that bread that we have known about from generation to generation to generation, and we make and we put back on this table holy, holy things for you in your hunger, wherever you are hungry. And let us be those people that can go out into this world that is broken not on accident but on purpose. The ways of sin are on purpose. In those worlds out there with those people that we are not supposed to know, not care about, not ask about, not want to help, not want their help. And make the world that would be the world that could be if all of us were allowed to hear the voice of God's call in these bodies made on purpose, in these hearts and minds and brains made on purpose for the glory of God. What if we, all of us, could hear and say, "Here am I, send me." Amen.